Hello and welcome back to the next episode of the Radio Nasties podcast. As per usual, I am your host Richard with my co-host Vic.
Yeah, I am your fucking slut.
Alright.
It's been so gay. I'm sick of this.
Oh, I thought we'd had a fucking enough of that.
I'd rather be shooting squirrels. Can I shoot you?
Why are you shooting squirrels?
Because they're gay. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. You're all unsafe.
Eli Roth month is finally over, and we're moving on to better things.
Well, one would say. You're still here.
We're only a minute in, and I've already been berated. Oh, back to hell with you.
Don't.
Similar to last year, how we did a top 10 of all time, we're going to do a top 10 of the last decade. Do we have a name for this decade? Obviously, we have like the 90s, the noughties, the teenies.
Oh, God. I don't know.
The last 10 years.
Yeah. They were horrible.
There were some alright films, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I'm still alive.
So, similar to last year, mine is in a 10 to 1 fashion, but you've done yours a bit differently this year?
Yeah, I've done mine in like year order, 2010 to 2019. I think there's one film from each. Pretty sure there is.
Okay, cool.
Also, we've obviously got our honourable mentions.
Which yes.
Were many films that didn't make the cut, but we'll go through a few of them.
Yep.
When we finish.
And you've had two that you've omitted from the list because they were in your all-time?
Yeah, I've omitted, I think it's Mandy and Dead Snow 2. I like too many films to put them back on a list.
Yeah.
I might as well give other films a chance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose in your terms, this is more of a secondary, because they're on the all-time list.
Yeah.
It's you don't really need to reiterate, like, I really like Mandy. Especially not Dead Snow 2. We've done an entire episode on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, my lists are interchangeable. Secondly.
Yeah, like, just to point out again, this isn't necessarily what we think are the 10 best films.
No, these are ours.
Yeah, just our personal ones we've enjoyed.
And obviously, like I said, there are many films that I could change these with that we've put in the honorable mentions, which will explain why, I guess. But, you know, they could have been in this list. It's just been a case of, I have to cut these beautiful films down.
Yeah. Right, shall we delve into this?
Yeah.
Who's going first?
You go first.
Okay. Number 10. Like last year, this was probably the hardest spot because it's the cut-off spot.
Okay.
And there are a couple of films that I did want to rewatch before doing the list.
I just want to reiterate. I mean, I don't know if you said it, but we don't know each other's lists.
No, we don't know each other's lists. Yeah, it's been all secret hush-hush.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so my number 10, it could change because there are quite a few that I didn't get around to rewatching. And this one in particular hasn't got its home release yet in the UK. It's been out a while in the US. By the time this episode goes out, it will be out and I might have watched it by now. So maybe I'll cut in and change it at some point.
Yeah.
But number 10 from 2019... directed by Mike Flanagan and starring Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
The sequel to The Shining, which I think was better than most people.
I thought you were going to say better than The Shining.
Oh, then. No.
It's like, fucking hell, Richard.
No, no. Oh,
that's
I do.
The end of this list.
I do love The Shining for me. I do love The Shining. I think that was number 6 in my all-time list.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, like I say, it was the sequel to The Shining, and I think it's done well because Mike Flanagan, he's one of the up-and-coming horror directors of this decade, I think.
Yeah.
You've not seen it, have you?
No, not yet, but I have the Steelbook pre-ordered, obviously.
So do I.
I think it's out March 9th, so it's
very soon.
Next week?
Yeah, so by the time this episode's it will be out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't say too much about it because I don't want to spoil it for Vic, but it's genuinely really good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
The home release comes with a 3 hours director's cut.
Yes, of course,
I'm looking forward to delving into.
Yeah, because when I was buying the Steelbook, there was a lot of people moaning because it's only the Blu-ray that has the
director's cut. Yes, because the Steelbook is the 4K, and you get the 4K on theatrical, but you only get the director's cut.
Yeah.
In which I can see why people are annoyed, but...
Yeah, it's, I mean, it swings around about, doesn't it? It's like we're talking about. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure 4K looks beautiful.
Yeah, but I'd be annoyed if it was, like, only on DVD. Exactly. At least we're getting it on a good quality format.
Yeah, but, I mean, Blu-ray's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 4K is just, like, a bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of the time, I'll only get a 4K if it's on the Steelbook, and I was buying the Steelbook.
That's what I do now. I've got loads of 4K.
Well, yeah, you don't even have a 4K.
No, and I've got, like, more 4K films than you, I think.
Yeah. I'll point out a few of my favourite bits. Ewan McGregor as Danny Torrance steals the show. Really, he's great in it. Some of the recasts in this are brilliant.
Spot on.
Yeah. The only sort of downside I'd probably say to the film is the end gets a bit fan servicey.
Yeah, I did hear this.
Not enough to ruin it for me, but I think it might annoy some people. But yeah. It was a bit what I wanted. They didn't overuse the fan service. I knew it would be in there a bit.
Well, they said that, didn't they, when they were making it? They were like, it's kind of half the book and then half the book and half the sequel to The Shining.
Yeah, because I'm in the middle of listening to the audiobook, so I don't know if the end of the book is as fan servicey as the film.
Knowing Stephen King, I would say it probably is.
Yeah.
He does like his callbacks, because he's got this whole connected universe kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's my number 10, Doctor Sleep.
So, mine is obviously the first 2010, and it's directed by Jim Mickle. Don't think many people know him. It is Stakeland.
Oh, I believe this might have been an honourable mention in your last top 10. Right,
I think it was, yeah. It stars Nick D'Amici as, he's called Mister. He hasn't got a name, he's just called Mister. And he's kind of like this mysterious, you know, like the grizzled zombie killer. But in this film, it's an apocalypse of vampires. The vampires are very similar to, they're like aggressive zombies.
Right.
But they're like proper vampires, you know what I mean? They don't glitter, stuff like that. It also stars Connor Paolo as, I think he's just called the boy or something.
Okay.
And he basically, you know, right at the beginning, he loses his family. And then Mr. kind of like, doesn't really want to take him on. But he's kind of like, yeah, I'll take you on and show you what you need to do. Yeah, show you how to survive and then fuck off. And then it's kind of just like a little road trip through apocalyptic America dealing with these vampires. It's got great world building. One of the forms of currency which I liked are vampire's teeth. The incisors, he goes, kills a vampire, and then he gives that over as currency. Fun fact also, it has a supporting role from Daniel Harris.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
she's in it. And it's also got, just remembered, the main observer from Fringe.
I think you mentioned that last time.
He's the main bad guy. He's like the head of some sort of religious cult. It's really gritty. It's really like, the first scene, spoilers, so if you don't want to hear this, you know, go watch it. But in the very first scene, a vampire eats a small baby. And it's fucking grim.
I think I might have seen that scene.
Yeah, and it kind of just like drops it. And you're like, oh my god, this is the kind of film it's going to be, is it? And then after that, again, it just doesn't pull any punches. It's just grim. One of my favourite parts is when Mister, he runs up to these two guys and they're raping someone. And he just like obliterates them. But it's not like violence where you go, that was cool. You go, oh my god, let's make sure we're on his side. But yeah, it's a very dark apocalyptic tale. You know, it's not one of these fun ones where you're going through, oh, the world ended, let's have fun.
Yeah.
It's fucking grim, and nobody's safe.
No, I need to check that one out.
Yeah. One little thing I did as well, I just, for anyone who cares, I mean, I don't really now, but it's just for, we do bring it up a lot. I've also put the Rotten Tomatoes scores down for
films as well. Oh, right, okay.
So this one got a 74% critical. And 62% user. So, take from that what you will. But definitely one of my favourites.
Right, my number 9 from 2011, so early on in the decade.
Okay.
Directed by Adam Wingard.
Oh, we've got the same one, mate.
Oh, same place. Right, that's worked out very...
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a few overlaps again last year. Starring...
Shani Vincent,
you're next.
Yeah.
The home invasion meets slasher film.
Yeah, the twist on the slasher tropes film. They kind of play on all the kind of silly things in slasher films, don't they?
Yeah.
It's a really kind of tongue-in-cheek slasher, kind of. It's kind of like nearly a parody.
Yeah.
But you still get the same kind of, it's still like tense, and it's still, and the fight scenes and the gore are really pretty well done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also got AJ Bowen in it.
Yep.
He's in a lot of horror films, including another one of Adam Wingard. He's in, I think he did The Guest. He's in that.
Oh,
as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe Swanberg, which was in VHS, I think. He's been in a good few. Barbara Crampton is in this film. And there is also a very small role. He plays the boyfriend of one of the kids. Ty West, the director.
Yeah, I think. I can't even remember a character's name, and it's one of my favourite films of the decade.
Yeah, I don't really remember the character names, to be fair.
Yeah, well, Shani Vincent's character, I think she's one of my favourite final girls ever.
Well, she makes it believable.
Yeah.
There's a reason. There's a reason why, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, we won't spoil it, but there's a reason why, like one of the characters says, you know, she's so good at killing people.
Yeah, we didn't realise she'd be so good at killing people, which is really weird, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
and,
great.
But there is a reason for it. She does bring up a part of a backstory, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's genuinely that kind of slasher where it's literally the same kind of pacing, the same kind of plot points as a slasher.
Yeah.
But every time you get to these plot points, they kind of twist it on the head. The villains in it are great as well. They wear, like,
animal masks. It's like a sheep and...
A wolf and a fox, maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's often in these sort of, like, hybrid genre mashups, they're either don't work or but they've hit the nail right on the head doing the slasher home invasion mashup. And the end, it's great,
incredible. And again, there's a reason for it.
Obviously this film came up in our first ever vote, didn't it? It was between this and The Void, and then surprisingly The Void won.
We generally thought Your Next was gonna win,
so we'll have to pick up Your Next at some point in season two.
One a little fact as well before we move on to the next one. Well, yeah, it'll be yours again because we've done that. Yeah. You obviously noticed this, Richard, but there's a kill right at the beginning. The guy that plays that is Larry Fassenden. He's major in horror as well. You would probably know him most, Richard, from that. It was that film. Was that Bring Out Your Dead or something? The one with Charlie from Lost. Don't Bring Out Your Dead or something.
Oh, what is that film?
Because you really like it, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's his little mate in it. I can't remember what it's fucking called.
Yeah, because that film's got a great cast. It's got like Angus Scrimm and... it's great.
I Sell the Dead.
That's it. I Sell the Dead. Yeah, about corpse robbers.
Yep.
Good little horror comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, before we move on, this got 78% critical and 60% user, which I was surprised at.
I thought that would be a bit high. It's very beloved in the horror community.
I mean, I didn't think it would get as good as that percent for critical.
Yeah, or I would have thought it'd be flipped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, I'll move straight on to my number eight then. From 2015, directed by Jason Lee Howden and starring Milo Cawthorn? I can't even read my own notes.
Yeah.
I won't spend too much time on this because we've done an episode on this film. Deathgasm.
Good little film.
Oh, I fucking love that film.
Yeah.
Like, so much fun.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. It's,
It's me funny. All over. It's got Evil Dead vibes. Yeah. It's got demons. It's got fucking metal in it. I'm like, this is me. This is...
And it's got, the New Zealand humour?
It's a New Zealand comedy, and they are funny bastards, those Kiwis.
Yeah. Great film. So we're moving on.
And, well, just as a little connection that I forgot to mention in my episode on Mega Time Squad, the main character in this who plays Brody plays Damage in Time Squad.
Right.
And I think Mega Time Squad is like directed by the guy who did the effects for Deathgasm.
Oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah, I found out there were a lot of links between the two films.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll move straight on to your number eight then.
So this is 2012, obviously, directed by Don Coscarelli. Starring Chase Williamson, Rob Mays, Paul Giamatti, and Clancy Brown. It is John dies at the end.
Oh. For people who don't know the name Don Coscarelli, he's most famous for directing the Phantasm franchise and Bubba Hotep.
This is quite a love of mine, this film. I read the book before I even realised there was a film of it. And I adored the book. The book is great. Go check out the book, because there's a lot they leave out of the film. The film is nearly a bad job, but it's so fun that I really like it. It's kind of one of these kind of like philosophical horror films where they kind of try and trip you out. There's a guy on it that says, you know, when you're dreaming, have you ever dreamed and you heard a noise? And then when you wake up, it is a noise. And it's like, how did your brain know that that was going to happen at that time? It's that kind of film.
Right.
But it's wacky. It's kind of like, you know, it's got Evil Dead in there. It's got Phantasm all over it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it does.
Great, you know, like effects. There's some pretty touchy CGI. It's very low budget.
Yeah, I would imagine being Don Kraskarel.
Yeah, there's some touchy CGI, but it's nothing like, you know, glaring.
Yeah, nothing that would offend you, like, I can't watch this. It looks awful, yeah.
And the subject matter is great. It's about two, essentially, monster hunters. And it kind of, you know, kind of flips through, you know, back and forth through time to, you know, he's kind of telling the story in the present. And then they show you how. The reason why they become monster hunters is because they get stabbed with a needle. It's got a drug in it. And it's essentially alive. It's called the soy sauce. And once they take it, they can essentially flip through time. Right. But it's kind of like it's not happening. Do you know what I mean? It's as if they're doing it in their head. Like, there's one point where one of the characters says, I think you're going to be getting calls from me for years, all from this night. And you're like, oh, fucking hell. But it's got some great comedy in it. It's that kind of film. It's fantastic. It's like Phantasm 2. Do you know what I mean? It's like, where it's got that. It's still Phantasm a horror. Too,
yeah.
It's over the top, though, and it's comedic.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. But it's really good. But with Don Coscarelli, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
60% critical and 54% user.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it's a very mixed. But yeah. I think a lot of the book lovers really didn't like it because
it took a lot out.
But the book's long. You know, the book's like 400-500 pages. Yeah. So
I'm assuming the film's like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do.
They kind of do the bare bones.
Yeah.
They leave the best bits out of the book, but you can understand why.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I recommend that definitely if you like films like Phantasm, especially Bubba Hotep. There's a lot of Bubba Hotep in this as well. And if you don't like Bubba Hotep, I don't want
to
know you.
Right, shall we move on to number 7?
Yep.
From 2018, directed by Panos Cosmatos, starring our Lord and Saviour, Nick Cage, Mandy.
Amen.
Yeah. Obviously one of Vic's all-time favourites.
Yeah, I've watched that
fucking
too much.
Cracking film.
Yeah.
So
everything
good.
Is well done in that film.
Everything you've ever wanted in a Nick Cage film.
Yeah, it's got film. You know, when you go into a film and they've got that whole ranking, it's an unofficial ranking, but they go, you know, how high is the Cage freak out in this film?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you know, he goes up to 10, or, you know, oh, he's only on 2. This is like, I think I've said this to you, but I genuinely think the director went, just do a Cage moment. Like, go mental.
Yeah, well, I generally think they were just recording Nick Cage's life and made a film based around it.
He's hit a
And now they are making a film where he plays himself.
Yeah.
Which is just, I can't wait for that. Yeah, Mandy, everything in this film, the score is phenomenal.
Yeah, unparalleled.
Yeah, and it's almost like two different films sliced together.
You call it three, because I think there's three chapters in there. I think there's the first chapter, the second chapter, and then I think it's the last chapter where it's Mandy.
Yeah.
You wait like an hour and, you know, like, I don't know, like an hour before Mandy actually comes up on the screen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the first one's sort of like just like a psychedelic
trip out thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of really weird, unusual effects.
Yeah.
And then you've got the
second chapter is the, it's about the cult. It's the
introducing a lot
of the elements of the cult, which
and
gets
then
even
the
more
end
tricky.
It just turns into like Lovecraftian nightmare,
Nick
Cage freakouts.
Yeah, he takes like super acid.
Yeah.
And then just runs.
The scene of him in the bathroom
is
just great.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be an episode soon on Mandy
to give a
little teaser of.
Yeah.
Future things to come. I do think it's one of those you'll love it or hate it films, though.
It's very artsy,
yeah.
Which I don't usually like. But it's the elements of the artistic elements, they are artistic elements that I really like. Yeah, like the neon, you know, backdrop and the 80s kind of synth, you know, soundtrack, and it's got Nicolas Cage in it.
Yeah. That's all I needed for this film. Nick Cage, horror film.
Boom. I'll watch a shit Nick Cage film.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the few actors, if he's on the case, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I'll buy it. And they're usually terrible.
Yeah. But a lot of them I know I'll never watch. Yeah. It's just like, I'm just trying to buy any Nick Cage film.
I buy a Nick Cage film just for hoping there's going to be a Nick Cage out.
Yeah. Right, do you want to move on to your next one?
So, this is from 2013, directed by Fede Alvarez.
Wonder what this could be.
Yeah, I wonder. Starring Jane Levy, Lou Taylor-Pucci, Charlotte Fernandez, and, spoilers, a very small cameo from our other Lord and Saviour, Bruce Campbell. It's the Evil Dead remake. Probably one of the best remakes. Not probably, it is one of the best remakes I've ever watched.
Yeah, yeah. Especially modern remakes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it still does its own thing.
Like, yeah, it's not, still, you know,
it's a soft reboot, I suppose, in a sense.
Yeah, yeah. Before soft reboots were officially
canonized.
In the Evil Dead timeline.
Yeah, different universe in a different dimension or something. There's some incredible fucking gore in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the end scenes is pretty much completely blood.
Well, doesn't it? I think it holds the record for the most blood used in the film. I feel like maybe it might have been beaten by It or something now, which upsets me.
Yeah, I'd rather Evil Dead had it. Yeah. But it's really well acted. They do the whole, you know, like the original Evil Dead. But the original Evil Dead is so campy now.
Yeah.
It's great for it, but you know what I mean? It's if you watched it, you know, it's then now they really sell the whole serious route of the Evil Dead. They go proper fucking grim.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not fun and games anymore. It's back to
pure horror.
Yeah.
Because we were so against this film when it was...
Yeah, but we had to see it.
Yeah. Well, we were so against it, like, oh, why are they remaking the Evil Dead? Yeah. And it's like, well, Sam Raimi's involved. It's like, okay then.
Yeah.
And then we saw the trailer and we were like...
Looks all right.
This looks decent. Yeah. And then we went to the cinema and we were just like,
still the best cinema trip I've ever been
by
on.
Far.
Because
by
there
far.
Was four, five, six people.
And you
there
could tell they were all hardcore.
Yeah, there was two, it was just me and Richard and then two older couples.
Yeah.
Like, but separate couples. Like one was right behind us and one was like in the corner. And the best bit about it was, which made it most, the most memorable is right at the end when Bruce showed up. For literally like a second. And all he says, he's even like, he's in complete shadow nearly.
Yeah.
And he's just like groovy. And the old people behind us, you could hear the guys going, woo! Like, they knew.
Yeah.
That was the best part about it. Everyone in that cinema knew what they were getting into.
Yeah.
And everyone came away very ecstatic at the end of it.
Yeah. It's been a good decade to be an Evil Dead fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got more than we should have, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for a sequel.
Oh, please.
I just want Mia back. I really want Mia back. Yeah,
it's... Unfortunately, looking more and more unlikely. Any time there's sort of an update, it does seem like they are just moving on track with another Evil Dead film that's not...
With Bruce.
Or without Bruce.
Yeah, not with Bruce. That's what I meant, yeah. So, just put Mia in it.
Yeah.
Like, do the best thing and just put Mia in it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but no,
Fede
Alvarez too busy producing Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboots.
I mean, I'm not disappointed, but I'm like, can you not direct something?
Girl in the spiderweb films and stuff. It's like, oh, come on, mate.
Go back. You were good at this.
Yeah.
The Evil Dead remake and Don't Breathe were two of the best fucking horrors after. Don't Breathe was tense as shit. That was great, and then it got really grim. Yeah, before we move on, this only got 62%
Don't
critical.
Agree with that at all.
No.
It's gore as well.
And, 63% user.
No, I don't agree with that either.
I genuinely think that's a lot of hardcore fans that are just going, no.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
And it's like, just watch it. Like, we were against it.
Yeah, we were those fans.
Let's just go and see it.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just go. The trailer looks all right. I don't want to get my hopes up. We'll just go and see it anyway. There's nothing else to go and fucking see. And then we saw it and was like, oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
If you're on the fence, I mean, you don't have to listen to me, but...
It's probably the goriest mainstream film.
Yeah.
There's gorier films, but I'd say it's definitely the goriest mainstream film.
There's some real bad deaths in this film. Yeah. I can't remember his character name, but that Lou Taylor-Pucci, he goes through the war.
He has
that
a rough
guy
old
is,
deal, yeah.
is the hero of that film. Yeah. I don't care what you fucking say. I mean, Mia, fair enough, but he was on it. Yeah. He had a fucking needle in his eye.
But at the same time, he is the one that reads from the book.
True. But he made up for it. That's what I'm saying. He read from the book and he's like, yeah, to be fair, I read from the book. I'll take all the shit. Give me the needles.
When it literally said on it, don't read it.
Yeah.
Right. So, ready to move on?
Yeah.
Cool. My number six is from 2015, directed by Jeremy Solnier. And starring Anton Yelnich, God rest his soul, Green Room.
Yep.
The also starring Patrick Stewart, can't forget that.
Yep.
The neo-Nazi entrapment murder spree film.
That a lot of people say isn't a horror film.
It is. It's horrific. Horrifying.
Yeah. And it's realistic.
Yeah.
This could happen. Probably did.
Based on true events.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of my honourable mentions.
I think it was in your honourable mentions last time as well. Yeah, it's a fucking cracking film. Again, another great tension film.
Yeah. Patrick Stewart is phenomenal.
I mean, it goes without saying, but yeah, I just want to reiterate.
It's very little. He plays a villain.
Yeah.
And he plays like one of the scariest villains.
Yeah, he plays like the leader of the neo-Nazi
group of, cause.
Because it follows like a punk band. Who are, they're like desperate for gigs.
They get diverted, don't they? I think they go for a gig and he's like, oh, sorry, I've got you another one here.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all going okay, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I think he warns them, like, you know, it's a
he does say, bar. He says, don't play any of this and don't play any of that.
Yeah, he's like, play bar. Like your old fast stuff. And they open their set with Nazi punks Fuck Off by Dead Kennedys.
So like, what are you doing?
I mean, I know you've got a message, but look where you are.
Exactly.
Guys.
And the best of it is, like, the club they're in is literally in the sticks.
Yeah.
It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's like they've got balls doing it and backfires on them.
Yeah. Not because of that, though, to be fair.
No.
They witness something.
They just see something they shouldn't have seen and then they basically.
I don't think the skinheads really know what to do with them at first, do they?
And no.
It kind of
fucks
up.
Well, that's why they have to bring in Patrick Stewart, don't
they? Yeah, it's kind of like a ball rolling situation. It's just picking up.
If you see this film and you'll never look at somebody wearing red laces the same way again.
There's an awful scene with duct tape. That's all I'll say.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just to warn anyone, there is some dog violence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. But it's not, do you know what I mean? I'm not saying it was fucking hell. Like, it's just to warn you if you don't like that kind of thing.
Does anybody like that?
So no, I don't. But I mean, the Green Room dogs thing is well less. It's more tame than some stuff I've seen, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's very. They're quite classy with the dog violence. Do you know what I mean? It's not very in your face. It is, but it's more about the sound and stuff in it from the dogs. And then you get kind of like a little bit of an emotional scene with the dog near the end of it as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Which kind of makes you feel a little bit better, but then you're like, oh my God, why did this happen? But yeah, it's fucking gory.
Yeah.
But like realistic gore. It's not like heads popping and shit, but it's...
Well, realistic gore is worse.
Yeah.
You feel it more and you're like, bleh, yeah. Bleh, yeah. Grim.
But a lot of it is done, a lot of the violence is kind of, it's on screen, but it's kind of off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Including, you know, the duct tape scene and stuff like that. It's all kind of very, you imagine it worse because you're like, oh my God, I can hear it. I can hear it happening, but I can't see it. And then you see it and you're like, oh, it's worse than what I thought it was.
Yeah. It's such a shame what happened to Anton Yelnich.
Yeah, he was incredible in this.
Yeah. Right, do you want to hit me with your next one?
Yeah. So this is 2014, obviously. You'll know this. Directed by Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement.
Yes.
Starring Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi and Jonathan Brew, which links back to your Mega Time Squad.
Yep.
It is What We Do in the Shadows.
Incredible film.
Probably the best horror comedy I've seen. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, it is.
I do like Shaun of the Dead, obviously, but I think this goes past it. There's something about the New Zealand humour.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got essentially a mockumentary about a group of age-old vampires, and they're just fucking idiots. And they're just all idiots.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely like The Office, but in a mansion with old vampires. And Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement and Jonathan Brew, they all fucking play off each other incredibly. There's a great scene where they both get into like kind of an argument and they both jump up flying and they're kind of just hissing at each other And then they just kind of slowly float back down. Like, we've got the argument on there.
Apparently, there's just like a ridiculous amount of unused footage for this film. What? Apparently, there's something like 40 hours of...
Yeah. How long was the film? An hour and a half?
Yeah,
41 and a half hour
cut. And obviously, there's a TV series of it now as well, which I haven't got around to watching yet.
Apparently, it's really good, though.
I'd imagine it is, yeah. There was talks of a spin-off at one point.
We are wolves. Or we are wolves, but it's supposed to sound
werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah, but the title of the film, it's
We
Are Wolves, because you're saying we are wolves, but it sounds like that in New Zealand dialect.
We are wolves.
It was a really clever title, to be honest with you. But yeah, there's kind of like a different group that pop up through the film, and they're the werewolves, and they're really polite.
And if you watch Fight of the Conchords, it's Murray.
Prisoned.
Werewolf meeting.
Bend meeting. Oh my god. He may be dead.
Well, maybe isn't, maybe isn't.
No, he may be dead. Maybe he's what? He may be dead. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. What is
it? It's when he's wrote a song because he's interested in some girl and he's getting...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, do you want to hear my song? Yeah. Like, yeah, going, hi. Was that it?
Yeah. It's got Jermaine Clement in it as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think this was advertised as from the creators of Flight of the Conchords.
It's a really fun film.
Yeah.
A really fun film, especially if you like them whole mockumentary kind of, which I love.
Yeah.
If they do them right. And this one smashes it. 96% critical.
Oh, well deserved.
86 user. Which,
Yeah.
96? 100?
100? 102?
Yeah.
Good measure.
That was nearly New Zealand there. 100? 102? Go watch it if you haven't.
Yeah.
And then go watch the series, I guess. I'm sure it's good.
I, just as a fun little memory, I remember, because we were on a trip to HMV, and you were on about this film. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. I'm going to see if I can find it. And then you found it, and it was the only copy they had left.
Yeah. No sharesies on this film.
Yeah. But I got it eventually anyway. Yeah. I think I just Amazoned it, to be fair.
Yeah. It was a lot of hassle, this was.
Had to wait in all day for the delivery. They could have just put it through your laptop. Oh, yeah. Right, have you got anything else you want to say about it before we move on?
It's great.
Yeah. I think that's one we've also promised to review at some point. Yeah,
we've got to do that.
Yeah. Okay, my number five. Getting into the top five now. A repeat appearance from a director further down on the list. From 2013. Directed by Mike Flanagan. And starring Karen Gillan.
This is on my honourable mentions.
Oculus.
Yeah. Yeah. This is on me honourable mentions.
Yeah. This film just came out of nowhere for me. I just... I remember seeing it for sale in the shop, and I was just like, oh, horror film. And then I heard about it from somewhere, saying it's like one of the best modern horror films going.
Yeah,
and
it's incredible.
I checked it out, and they were not wrong. It is so, so good.
What year was this, sorry?
2013.
Yeah, this got beat by Evil Dead to me. That was the only reason it didn't make the list.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, like I say, it stars Karen Gillan from Doctor Who fame, who was always my favourite companion. She also plays Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy. She even looks good in blue.
Yeah, yeah. Until her hand falls off. Nah, she
still
did looks
it for
fit.
Me.
Yeah. Can you take both of them off?
I'll be using this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this might have been Mike Flanagan's directorial debut.
Yeah, I think if it's right, I think
because I think it was based on a short film he'd already done, and it's basically about a killer mirror.
Yeah, so if you know the SCP universe online, which are kind of like creepypastas, but they're essentially documents on a government that collects monsters. And it's always weird inanimate objects, stuff like that. And this is very, very similar to an SCP story. Okay. I think this is where he got his inspiration from.
That would make sense. Yeah.
But there's like 200 of them now. But it's very like that. So if you like that, and you haven't seen that film, this film, go watch it.
Yeah, it sort of flashes back and forth between them as kids and then them as adults, basically trying to.
Beat this mirror.
Yeah, and prove to the outside world that they're not nut jobs and this mirror do be killing people.
Yeah. The child storyline is horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
because their parents essentially go insane, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't, so they're like, oh my god. Their mum gets mental.
Like chained to the wall and everything. It's fucking brutal.
Yeah.
And child actors can make or break a film, and the kids in this, they're great. I ain't got anything bad to say about them. But the mirror, it sort of warps their sense of reality. They can't tell what's
it feeds on real. Living things around it.
Yeah, yeah, because Karen Gillan's character is basically set up the house to keep track of how the mirror's working. Yeah. She has like plants set every few meters, and then when the plants stop dying, she knows, okay, this thing's got a radius of...
There's one point where she puts a dog in a cage on top, like next to it, didn't she? She's like, I'll show you.
Yeah.
I'll show you.
And she has a boyfriend ring her every...
Oh, no, yeah, no, sorry, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because the brother's with her. Brother's she's with got me. The boyfriend to ring her every hour to make sure everything's still that real.
Starts getting fucking trippy, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's the scene where she bites into an apple.
This is incredible, this scene.
Yeah.
Because it twists you twice.
Yeah. And then she looks and she's actually bit into a fucking light bulb.
Yeah.
And then it twists again. It's like, no, it wasn't apple.
Yeah. Because she starts picking the glass out of her mouth. Yeah. And then she realizes that I think the brother comes in. And he's like, what are you doing? And then she looks again and it's still an apple. And you're like, oh, fucking hell, you got me twice. It feeds on electricity as well, I think, because all the lights, she has to, that's why she's got the bulb, isn't she? Because it keeps
The bulbs keep going out. Yeah. The ending is so great. It's so bleak.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers if you haven't seen it, so stop here and forward it or something, but the mirror wins.
Yeah. Twice. I love, if anybody knows me, I'm a sucker for a bleak ending in a film. And this one is bleak.
Yeah.
Right, do you want to move on to your next one?
Yeah. So this is from 2015, directed by Craig S.A. Zahler, starring Kurt Russell, Matthew Fox, Patrick Wilson, Richard Jenkins, and cameos from David Arquette and Sid Haig. Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, right, yeah, of course. I've still not watched any of his films.
Yeah, and they're all good.
Oh, I know, but, I've heard they're all good.
He did Brawl in Cell Block 99 and Dragged Across Concrete, which was, his films of, it's kind of like a very serious Tarantino, and then his violence is, like, uncomfortable, like, it's, oh my fucking god. Like, Bone Tomahawk has one of the worst kills I've ever seen. But it's essentially a Western, very like done exactly like a Western. The dialogue is like Western, is a Western. You know, everything's fucking up. When they shoot, sometimes they don't hit things because the guns are shit. But what essentially happens is a young woman, she gets kidnapped by, they're told Indians, Native Americans, and this group goes into the mountains to save the girl. It turns out the Native Americans aren't that normal. They're a bit fucked up. Okay. They're essentially like more like troglodytes than anything else. They like live in caves and shit, but they're weird. They have they've cut a hole in their neck, or it's part of the neck, I'm not sure. They stick it in the neck, and then when they scream, it kind of comes out in a howl.
Oh.
So they scare them by doing it, obviously. It's really grim. Really gritty, like it's fucking grim, like especially when the violence starts happening, you're like, oh my god, if anybody's seen it, you know what kill I'm on about, but it's oh my god. But you've got Kurt Russell in it, who steals a show.
Kurt Russell,
yeah, especially in westerns. Matthew Fox from Lost, who does an incredible job as a kind of like a gentleman shootist. Patrick Wilson, who's from Insidious and Conjuring. And then Richard Jenkins from, you know, Cabin in the Woods, and Step Brothers, stuff like that. It's really fucking good. But like I said, if you get uncomfortable over horrific kills, get ready for it. And the Sid Haig cameo is great as always. 91% critical.
Oh.
73% user. It's a very level-hated film, I think. They're very slow. It's very build-up-y. Very tense. Not a lot happens until like the last 20 minutes or stuff, you know what I mean? Like, but the film is great up to then. It's just whether or not you like that kind of thing.
I need to get on his films. I've been meaning to do it for so long. Right, my number four from 2019, so very late in the game, directed by Ari Aster and starring Florence Pugh, Midsommar. I wasn't sure if this was going to make it onto my list, because the first time I saw it, I was a bit, I don't want to say disappointed, but I think I'd overhyped it for myself, because it's very, very Wicker Man-esque. And I fucking love the Wicker Man. I think it was my number 9. It's just, there's something about Ari Aster. He just, everything is so haunting. And he is the master of making you want to do a rewatch, because there is just so many different layers.
Undertones.
Yeah, and things you just didn't miss or wouldn't have got the first time round. It's got some of the most incredible cinematography I've seen in a horror film. It's so, and I think that's what makes it so eerie and so haunting, is how good the film looks. There's not really many horror films that are just set in beautiful, broad daylight, but
I've seen, and it, I'm not trying to be arty here, but like how it looks really contrasts the gore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when the gore happens, you're like, I mean, I've only seen one scene, but when it happened, I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah, well, usually when you see gory scenes, it's darkly lit deliberately, but this is like bright.
You're bright in your face.
Yeah. It is long. The theatrical cut runs at about 2.5 hours, and the director's cut is 3 hours. I did watch the director's cut on the rewatch for this, and
is it worth it?
It's worth it, but it's not essential. It doesn't really add. It is just basically an extended cut. It's, you don't have, you're not going to miss anything if you just watch the theatrical cut. There's only one scene that I can full on remember not being in the theatrical cut, and everything else, it was just like, I don't remember these lines, but I remember the scene. But there is one scene. I mean, it's not a massive scene, but it was a cool little extra scene into how these society is
functions.
Yeah, yeah. It's Florence Pugh. It gives an incredible performance. She's a fantastic actress. She's been in a few of. She was in Fighting With My Family.
What, the main girl?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she's going to be in Black Widow as well. Definitely an up-and-comer.
Yeah, I've still got to watch his films.
Yeah.
I haven't even watched Hereditary yet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I won't say too much, because Vix hadn't seen it, and there's probably a few people who haven't got around to it yet, because it's quite recent. If you can handle a 2.5-hour to 3-hour horror film, give it a chance.
So, my next choice is from 2016. I don't think anybody's going to know these people. But directed by, and I apologise if I massacre, Yeon Sung-ho, starring Yumi Jung, and Ma Dong-seok.
I mean, just from the names, I'm guessing it's Train to Busan.
Yeah.
I've still not seen it.
Yeah. It is, you know, a lot of people said it, and I was like, they've been saying this for like...
Anytime a zombie film comes out. 400
years. What's the best zombie film since this?
Yeah.
It's like,
is it though?
Is it though? This was worth it. It was quite dramatic, but it's Korean. There is quite a lot of, I've noticed in Korean films, not a problem, but there's a very over, it's kind of like Japanese. You know, they kind of over-dramatize some stuff.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Emotional scenes and stuff. It's kind of like, calm down, mate. But it's kind of like one of their tropes anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a bit of, but not much. The emotional scenes are a little bit like, but I think it's just, you know, like a culture difference. But it's a really good story. It's about a dad and his daughter is essentially a kind of estranged in herself from her. She's very young, but he's in business all the time. So she wants to go back to her mum or something. And he says, you're not supposed to be going back yet. She wants to go, so he's like, right, okay. Puts her on a train, and this is when the zombie invasion, apocalypse, whatever, happens. And they're all stuck on a fucking train, the whole film. And it's also kind of like, in the sense that George Romero would do it, it's also kind of like, you know, kind of like based on society. Like, the train eventually gets split into, like, the richer at the top. And the, you know, the ones that are at the bottom and in the middle, and they've essentially got to make their way from one end of the train to the top to get away from the zombies that are on the fucking train. The zombies are pretty cool in this. They're runners, and they also, if I believe, they can't do anything in the dark.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, in the film, they kind of eventually start to try and plan when the tunnels are going to be coming. And that's when they start walking through the zombies, because unless they're not walking through them, but they kind of climb around them. And as long as you don't touch them, the zombies, I think they literally just stand there. They just turn off kind of and stand there. Unless you touch them, they don't go for you.
Right.
But they're very aggressive. And obviously, you know, it's that kind of thing where it's a very tight space. So you've got them fucking, you know, everywhere. The characters are incredible. There's one big guy, big Korean guy, and he's got a pregnant wife, so he's fucking, like, protecting her. And he is a fucking beast. There's one point, no spoilers, well, obviously, I'm going to spoil it a little bit. There's one point where he holds off zombies by punching one. By the way, he does this all, like, barehanded, pretty much. Just punches zombies. Punches the zombie, and then lifts him up and spins him, so he's holding him sideways, and then uses him as a shield to hold off the zombies. It's great. But like I said, it's got a message in there. It's not just, you know, a zombie film for the sake of being a zombie film, which is fine. There's no reason not to be a silly zombie film. It is genuinely one of the best zombie films I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I've heard of a good few people say that.
Yeah. It's 93% critical and 88% user.
They've just announced a sequel, haven't they?
Peninsula. And there's also an animated prequel called Seal Station, which is fucking good as well. The animation doesn't take anything away from it. The characters are all just as well done. And it's, you know, you get to see the start of the zombie apocalypse. And then Peninsula, I believe, is set 5 years after, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, I need to check that out. Yeah. I feel like I've said that for every film that you've mentioned so far.
The next one is, you'll say it as well, I'm pretty sure you said it to me.
Right, my number three. This is a film directed by Fede Alvarez.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also starring Jane Levy.
Oh, is it Don't Breathe?
It is, from 2016, Don't Breathe. Yes. This was one I knew was going to be in my top 10, but it was just a case of how high up is it going to be? And that depended on the rewatch, how much, because if you're watching a film that relies on tension, more often than not, the second time you watch it, it's lost a lot of its pull.
Yeah,
but this was still just as tense as the first time I watched it. Even knowing what happens, you're still on the edge of your seat. It's Fede Alvarez is just, he's one of my favorite modern horror directors. Yeah. I really hope he doesn't leave the genre, because he's great. He's two for two at the minute. I love some of, like, the, there's a shot where it's like a 360 shot, and it's so good.
I know when you're on that.
Yeah. It just, every point, it just leaves you guessing. And I love the fact that there's not really good guys in this film.
Well, they're both bad.
It's people breaking into a house, and then the guy they're breaking into is a bit of a dick as well. So it's like, who am I rooting for?
Yeah.
Who do I want to come out of this? And it just...
I think it eventually becomes Jane Levy. You know what I mean? She has like a little arc that she goes through. I think after the arc, like near, you know, the last quarter of the film.
Yeah.
You go, oh, I want her to win now, to be honest. But it, like you said, it takes a long while to
She get has her. Good reasons for what she's doing, why she needs this money, but it's just not very... But yeah, it's Jane Levy breaking into a blind man's house who has... I think they think he's got like a couple of hundred K, and then when they find they find out it's like 3 million.
I think the thing is somebody ran over his daughter, so he got money for it.
Yeah, because they're like sort of semi-professional burglars.
Yeah.
I think the other character, his dad works for like a security.
Yeah, he gets the keys.
He knows how to get around these fancy... But they always make sure they don't steal more than 10 grand's worth of stuff, because that's when it becomes grand larceny. Then you get serious jail time.
Right.
And obviously there's the bit where they find out one of them's brought a gun in, and like, what are you doing? That's turning this into armed robbery. That's 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, that's the idiot.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, the first to die.
In a fucking grim scene as well.
Yeah. It's great. Everybody gives it 110%. Yeah, Don't Breathe.
Great film. So this one, 2017, directed by Justin Benson, starring Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson. It's The Endless.
Oh, yeah, we were just talking about this the other day. Yeah. I've had it for a while, still not watched it.
Yeah.
It was actually on my list to watch it. I wanted to get through my re-watches, and then I had a few first-time watches, you know, to make sure I've checked out all... the greats of the past decade, and yeah. I didn't even get around to it.
You should. It's a semi sequel to Resolution, which is also great. It was hard to choose between these two, to be honest with you. But I chose The Endless because it's kind of like a culmination of ideas from two films. It's very like Lovecraftian.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, thing. I could tell just from the cover, like, this is Lovecraft.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no fucking monsters and shit like that, but it's very, like, very Lovecraftian in the sense that there's dread. And then, you know, what eventually, I can't spoil this one, but...
Even just the name sounds...
The Endless, yeah. Long story short, there's some sort of cult. It's a death day or a UFO cult or something. And these two guys got away from it. And then this is them coming back because someone sent them a file or something like that. Anyway, there's a reason for them to go back, and then it's figuring out what the fuck is going on here. And then when you figure it out, you're like, what the fuck? Genuinely can't spoil pretty much anything of this, but I would highly say to anyone that's going to watch this, do not watch this without watching Resolution first.
Yeah, that was the advice.
It's not, again, it's not like direct at all,
yeah.
But it's indirect.
Right.
And you'll understand when you...
Yeah, I think the main reason that I haven't watched them yet is because I want to find a time I can watch them back to back, and that's never for me.
We watched them back to back, and it was kind of like one big long film, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In different characters, different, you know, setting kind of, but they all could... you'll understand when you watch it, because literally Resolution even comes to a point when you realise at the end of The Endless. So you don't even kind of get Resolution for Resolution at the end of Resolution, but then you do in The Endless. So it's part and parcel. Don't watch them. At least watch Resolution first, and then, you know, watch that the day after or something. Yeah. But if you can watch them together, yeah, go for it. 93% critical.
Oh.
67% user, which I'm not surprised at, because it's very weird.
Right.
I wouldn't say it's artsy.
I've heard a lot of people say their ideas were bigger than their budget.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, especially in the Resolution.
Yeah.
They had to... I think they did a great job what they did, but yeah, a bigger budget would have been better. But there's not really much in it that needs it.
Right.
And it's fucking well done, like, regardless. But like I said, it's kind of one of them love or hate films. It's nearly artsy. Do you know what I mean? It's not there, but it's like... it's very indie, but it's a great film. Watch it. Can't really say much about it. It's incredible, and it's genuinely one of the most uncomfortable films you'll watch.
Great edition of it from Arrow Video. Yeah, you get them again.
You get Resolution with that copy, so get it.
Right, my number two from 2018, directed by Ari Aster, and starring Toni Collette in an Oscar-worthy performance, snubbed, of course. Hereditary.
I wondered that if that was coming.
It was coming.
I was like, you picked Midsommar?
It was coming, trust me. Oh my god. Oh my god. This film, it is genuinely a masterpiece. And I don't like to throw that term out too lightly. It is a masterpiece. It is a phenomenally... great film. Oh my god. I didn't know anything about this film going in. I just heard people say it's one of the best horror films I've ever seen. Go check it out. And I'm so glad I didn't really
look at have.
Because when I heard the title Hereditary, I thought it'd be more of a realistic horror, but it's not. It's, you know, it's you know, demonic possession type, all the stuff that I fucking love, but done so well.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the actual story, it's not really anything we haven't seen before, but it's just the execution, and it's one of those films where you think you know what's going on, and you think, okay, this character's going to do this, and then that's, and then it completely...
flips it.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my god, I didn't see that coming, and it's... it shakes you about who you think the main character is. You think, oh, this is our... it's not. And then, again, like Midsommar, it's perfect for rewatches because you'll notice something that you didn't see the first time, and you'd be like, oh my God, yeah, that's so and so, and that's how that happened, and that's why they did that. And
it's all hidden in the background.
Yeah, yeah, it's so good. I need to do an episode on this soon because,
well, I haven't seen it. So.
Yeah, it's been on my list. I mean, literally from the moment I finished watching it, I was like, I need to. I know everybody's done an episode on Hereditary, but
fuck it. We're gonna do it better. Yeah. Probably worse.
Probably. As I said before, Toni Collette gives just an incredible performance.
She's great in pretty much everything.
Yeah.
She was great in Krampus as well.
Yeah. And just completely snubbed at the Oscars. Sense. She at least deserves a fucking nomination. If it wasn't a horror film, it would have been nominated. But it is a horror film. I think it's one of those ones that they labelled as a psychological thriller to try and get it into the awards. But
right.
You can't. Like, if anyone tells you this is a psychological thriller, you can fuck off. It's a horror film. It's horrifying.
It's like The Green Room in that sense, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not really one to get scared, but I was literally on my edge of the seat the whole time, like, oh my God. And I watched it with Rachel, who hates horror films, and then I just looked her at the end.
Did it ruin her?
Yeah. I was like, that was fucking good, wasn't it? She was like, no, it was fucking horrible. I don't ever want to watch that film again. It's great. You can tell when she's fucking terrified from a film because she'll make me go to the toilet with her to make sure she doesn't get killed by supernatural forces.
No, see, I don't get any of this. Charlotte's just like, old news. I've seen worse than that in real life. I've done worse than that in real life.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. Right, do you want to hit me with your 2018?
Yeah. Directed by Gareth Evans, which is the director of the Raid films.
Oh, okay.
Starring Dan Stevens and Michael Sheen. It's Apostle.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like a little period piece. Semi-Lovecraftian, kind of like semi-folklore kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Essentially, Dan Stevens' character, his sister goes missing on this island, kind of Wicker Man style. And he goes over and it's kind of like a cult, but they've got their own island. And then, as you go through, something fucks up. And something fucked up, really fucked up, is going on. The cinematography is incredible in this film. And the acting is incredible as well. It was just a really, one of them films where I kind of put it on and I was like, oh, it's the guy from The Raid.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll put it on, it's like, oh, he's doing a horror film. Okay. All right. And then after it, I was like, that was really good.
Yeah, I think you recommended this one to me not that long ago. Yeah.
It's very strange. It's a very strange movie. And, but some of the character arcs on it are incredible. It's really well acted, really well shot. Again, not really much I can say because it's one of them kind of mystery films. So anything you say would maybe make you know what's going on. So I'm not going to say too much about it. But like I said, well acted, incredibly shot. The story's great and it's really worth it. And it shows that director can do more than martial arts movies. Go see The Raids if you haven't seen them because they're incredible. Have you seen them?
I've watched part of the first one with you once.
Yeah.
I think you put it on like as background.
Ah, right, yeah. It's got an 80% critical and only a 54% user.
Ooh, right.
Number one.
My number one film from the last decade. Nobody gets any points for guessing what this is. But just for the sake of theatrics, film is from 2013. Directed by Fede Alvarez and starring Jane Levy, Evil Dead. Fuck.
Good film.
Great film. Especially for a film I went in thinking I would hate.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be the best cinema experience I've had in my life.
Yeah.
Going way back to our Hills Have Eyes remake comparison, it's ticked all the boxes of get the original people involved, but pass it on to somebody new. Stay true to the original, but do your own stuff. But make sure you hit the nail on the head. Don't keep too much. Don't do too much new. Or why have you remade it? Or why didn't you just make your own film? Again, with how's like how Hereditary, it twists to make you think who the main character is. Because you've got the bloke who you think, oh, okay, this is the
new
Ash.
And he looks like Ash. He's dressed like Ash.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they completely flip it over.
Right at the end.
Yeah.
Like, right at the end.
Yeah. Our antagonist is also our protagonist. And if we're going on to the modern trope of strong female characters, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
This is how you take a pre-existing franchise led by a male character.
The good thing about
flip it to a female and do it well.
The good thing about it was how she was very weak at the beginning.
Yeah.
She was a junkie. She was they were trying to get her off the drugs, weren't they? And then, you know, then she becomes a strong female character over the course of the film. By the end of it, she's got that incredible line where she's got her hand, spoilers, she's got her hand stuck underneath the car, and this fucking clone demon of her that's coming walking around.
Oh, the abomination. Yeah.
And then she's just like, she looks at her hand, and it's stuck under, and she literally just goes to pull her hand off, and she's like, I'm fucking sick of this shit. And then just pulls it out, and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah. As we were saying earlier, incredible gore.
Yeah.
All the characters, all the actors do great jobs. Fede Alvarez's direction is phenomenal.
There's really nice cinematography on this film as well.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous in a horrible way.
Yeah, it's not nice, but it's so well shot.
Just looking back, I've noticed all of my top five films have female leads, so progression points to me.
Oh, fucking hell. Right, I'll say some stuff in a minute that'll drive them points down.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it because obviously we will get to the Evil Dead franchise one of these days in
the future.
Amazing depth. Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. That's my top 10. Do you want to hit us with your 2019?
Yeah. Directed by Jordan Downey. I haven't done that much. And starring pretty much only Christopher Rye. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. This film was made on $30,000.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'd forgot. Yeah, you were just telling me about this.
The Headhunter. Great little film. Very low budget, obviously. It's about a Viking monster hunter who is he's a headhunter. He takes their heads when he kills them. And he is essentially waiting around for the monster that killed his daughter.
Oh, okay.
I really, really loved this film. Probably mostly because of how low budget it was. The stuff they did, like
it's always impressive when you've got a micro budget and they've just done something phenomenal. Yeah,
you know, this is the thing that turns most people off it is you know when he goes out for battle, you don't really see that. You see the preparation and the conclusion, and it's more about kind of like there's obviously a story running through it, but it's kind of like, you know, the day in the life of the monster hunter. There's probably maybe about 6-7 lines of dialogue in this film. And the undertones that you start to realise after a few rewatches is quite cool. But the costume design is incredible on the Viking-like armour. And, you know, the little cabin he's got and the heads of the monsters he brings in are so well done. And it's quite cool, you know, you don't see the battle, but it's quite cool watching him come in. You're like, oh, what's in the bag this time? He's got bag. He comes in with a bag, a head in the bag. And, you know, you're like, what's in, you know, one of them's a werewolf, and one of them's a goblin, and one of them's, and you see all these kind of, like, iconic monsters from fantasy and horror. And it's just a cool little film. Like I said, very slow-paced, it's very, you know, low-budget. There's not very much that happens, but like I've said so many times on this podcast, I really like simple films. It's a very simple story, it executes it so well. And there's some twists and turns along the way. But for $30,000,
yeah,
you ain't done half bad.
Like, you can't do a lot with 30 grand these days. So to make a film is...
Yeah. 100% critical.
Oh, okay.
Bearing in mind, there's only 12 reviews.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely it's, there's not going to be...
Yeah, it's very, like I said, it's very low budget. Only 56% user. But like I said, it's the kind of film, like most of mine on this list, where it is, you will love it or hate it. If you need to have something going on consistently... It's like one of the complaints they had about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They were kind of like, well, is it really a film? And it's like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it's you like what you like. If you don't like a film that isn't, you know, got an action piece or whatever, you're not going to like it.
Okay.
I thought it was incredible.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to look out for that one.
And that's my list.
So obviously you've not done a conventional 10-1 like I have, but if you had to single out one of these as your top spot.
My top spot?
Yeah.
It'd be either Evil Dead or What We Do in the Shadows.
So I guess collectively that would make Evil Dead top dog. Not surprised.
I would say that I'd probably lean to Evil Dead.
Right, okay.
If I had to choose.
Yeah.
But it's just because, you know, that's... We've got such a connection to that series.
Yeah.
It's kind of a given. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I'd left it out the list, it still would have been. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, that's it. That's our list. Shall we do some honourable mentions?
Yeah.
Okay, my first honourable mentions. The only reason they didn't make this list is because they're not films. I've got two TV shows.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah.
It's, this decade has been great for horror TV. A lot of that, I think, is down to streaming coming out as top dog. There's a lot of stuff that the streaming platforms are willing to do that conventional TV channels wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And they are Mike Flanagan's The Haunting of Hill House, a very loose adaptation of the film itself. It's 10 parts. It is just like watching a long Mike Flanagan haunted house movie. So if you like Mike Flanagan, which I'm hoping a lot of people do, check it out on Netflix. And keeping with the theme, Ash vs. Evil Dead. Three seasons of absolute...
What, not four?
Oh, Evil Dead. Perfection. Yes, we're upset that it got cancelled, but...
We shouldn't have got it.
I'm just so grateful for what we've got. We've been asking for an Evil Dead 4 for so long, and this decade we've got a great remake and the equivalent of about 6 movies worth of original Bruce Campbell, Ash Williams, Evil Dead content. So,
and it's all pretty much decent.
It's all great, yeah. It's a change of pace from the original Evil Dead trilogy, which is basically about Ash, because it's a TV show. There are more characters, but you get a lot more delving into the mythology of it. It's not even just deadites. We get other types of demons, and there's the right sort of fan service in it.
It's just enough.
Yeah.
I think if they went any more, you'd have been like, let's hold off this now.
Yeah.
Especially one thing, which, spoiler... If you haven't, it's getting the original actress back as his sister.
Yes.
I can't remember her name.
Yep. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because Evil Dead 2 is exactly a remake. Yeah. People still call it. It's got the fucking original actress on. I'm not getting into it again. Yeah. Right, do you want to do an honourable mention?
Yeah, I've just got a couple. I mean, I'll just run through them.
Yeah, you go ahead. I've got a few films that I'll mention.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go through four or five of them. But from 2010, Tucker and Dale was
That's teetering. On my list as well. Yeah,
teetering on the list that was. Yep. Had Black Death, which is another period piece about Black Death. I don't think it
sounds lovely.
It's not completely a horror film. That's probably why I left it off. It's kind of in the sense of Green Room. It's very horrific, but less. It's fucking horrifying. But I Saw the Devil, I want to say, I think it might be the Korean or Japanese.
Asian. It's definitely Asian.
Great serial killer film. 2011, The Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, that's on my list as well.
2012, I had Grabbers, which is a fun horror comedy about Irish people.
Oh my god.
Monsters attack them, and they find out...
I think I've heard of this film. Yeah.
The only way they can beat the monsters is because they have to be drunk, because the monsters suck their blood and die from the poison. It's very fun. Quite a lot in the same way as like Shaun of the Dead or something like that. I had The Collection as well, which is a sequel to The Collector. A lot of people don't like these films, but they're probably my favourite slashers. Some of my favourite slashers. 2013, Hatchet 3. Okay. Nearly made it solely on Sid Haig's cameo. Wolf Creek 2, which was such a fun sequel. Oculus, obviously. 2015, I had Tales of Halloween, which was like an anthology. That's really good. Check it out. I liked most of them. Like, there was a few that didn't like a lot of them, but I liked it. The Invitation.
Yeah, I've heard great things about that.
Very good film, but it's nearly a horror film.
Right.
Nearly. It's very good, and it's very like tense film, but I'd say it's more of like a psychological thriller. I also had He Never Died, which we covered in an episode. Yep. Green Room. And a final one, which was 2016's Shin Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. You're a big Godzilla man.
A lot more horrifying than most Godzilla films.
Yeah, I did hear that it was...
It was very grim. It went back to him being a horrible cunt.
You're a right fucking cunt, Godzilla, yeah. You are. Piss off.
You trampled this fucking building. There's kids in there.
Right, first honourable mention. Only reason it's not in this list is because it came out at the very, very end of 2009, so didn't technically qualify, but it's still worth a shout.
I had a few of them.
Yeah. Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah.
Great film, Sam Raimi.
I looked it up. Yeah. I was like, oh, this will be in it? Nope.
Well, yeah, it's like November 2009 or something, so just misses the cut-off. Maybe when we do our noughties list, it might finally make an actual appearance, because this was in my honourable mentions for the all-time list as well. A couple of James Wan films, Conjuring and Insidious. They're both... The Conjuring is, again, it's not really done anything new. It's done old things well.
Yeah, that was. I think that was my problem with it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I do like the film. I just didn't think it was as good as everybody made out.
Yeah.
It's very by the book.
Yeah, it's just a good haunted house movie. Yeah. Insidious, a bit more...
That was
unique,
quite more original, yeah. I did like
astral protection and...
Yeah, the first Insidious was cracking.
Other ones, not so much.
No.
Obviously, Cabin in the Woods, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yeah, I think you had a lot of my honourable mentions.
It was a hard list.
Well. Yeah.
And I said, the honourable mentions, it's interchangeable. Obviously, the top dogs stay, but it's very... Do you know what I mean? That's not a top 10 list, done.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, let us know yours. What are some of your favourite horror films from the past decade?
I don't want that. I don't care.
And we'll be back in 10 years with our top 10 of the 20s.
Jesus Christ.
Depressing, we can say that.
We're still doing this and not making money.
We'll give it up then.
Yeah.
Next week is Vic's pick, the first personal choice of season 2.
It'll make sense. When it comes to it, that's all I'll say.
Okay. Catch us then for that, and then we'll be back next week. Bye bye.
See you.
Doing this.
I didn't want to do it in the first place. Let's just quit now. Fuck 10 years.